Hi and welcome back, Undisclosed listeners. I'm Rabia Chaudhary. I'm an attorney, advocate, and author.
Hi, this is Colin Miller. I'm a professor of law at the University of South Carolina School of Law, and I blog at Evidence Prof Blog.
Now, I know it's been a few years since we took our hiatus, but Colin and I are back with a new incarnation of Undisclosed, Toward Justice. And we are excited to start off where it all began, with the case of the state versus Adnan Syed. A lot has happened since our very first season, back in 2015, and most of you are aware that Adnan is no longer incarcerated. So before we get into our first episode of this relaunch series, in which we will cover everything we haven't reported on about Adnan's case, I'm going to catch you up on exactly how and why Adnan was finally released from prison. Then after that, we are excited to finally reveal what many of you have been waiting a decade for, Colin's bombshell. The last few years of the procedural history of Adnan's case has been complicated, confusing, and frankly unprecedented. I'll get into the nitty-gritty behind-the-scenes stuff in a later episode, but for now, a quick recap. On September 19th, 2022, a hearing was held on a motion to vacate Adnan's conviction.
The state's attorney agreed and supported that motion to vacate. So, the question is, will Adnan Syed be set free or face a new trial? 11 News reporter Lisa Robinson.
The motion was brought jointly by the state's attorney's office of Baltimore and the defense. State's attorney Marilyn Mosby's office, having conducted a year-long investigation into Adnan's case, discovered the following things they felt entitled Adnan to a new trial: Brady material that was never turned over to the defense that implicated an alternate suspect, and new evidence implicating yet a different alternate suspect. Again, we'll get into all this new evidence in a later episode, but suffice it to say the court granted the motion and vacated Adnan's conviction. Adnan was in the courtroom that day, and I was seated behind him as his shackles were removed and he was led out into freedom by his legal team.
State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby was in the courtroom and shared her thoughts concerning this pending outcome.
My office was integral in ensuring that it passed, which provides prosecutors with a legal mechanism for the removal of a conviction based off of newly discovered evidence that calls into question the integrity of a conviction based on the interests of fairness and justice.
It felt like deja vu to me because I had envisioned this moment for decades, and going through the motions just felt surreal.
Then after that, on October 11th, 2022, Marilyn Mosby called a press conference and announced she was going to do a nolle pros, which means she was dropping all the charges against Adnan Syed based upon new DNA testing that excluded Adnan as a source of DNA from Haman Lee's shoes and clothing. Now, her shoes did have DNA present from four different sources, but none of those sources was Adnan. Now, under reasonable circumstances, that would have been the end of the case against Adnan, and he would have been free and clear for the rest of his life. Unfortunately, very little about this case is reasonable or normative. Instead, his charges and conviction were both reinstated by the Maryland Appellate Court after considering an appeal that was brought by Haman Lee's family. In that appeal, they argued they were given insufficient notice to appear in person at the September hearing on the motion to vacate. The Appellate Court of Maryland agreed, and that decision was appealed up to the Supreme Court of Maryland with the same issues raised by both the defendant and the victim's side. Ultimately, the Supreme Court of Maryland upheld the lower court's decision and reinstated the conviction and charges. They then sent the case back down to the Circuit Court to hold a hearing on the motion to vacate all over again, as if the first one had never happened at all.
This time, however, there was a new state's attorney in town. In 2022, Mosby was ousted by challenger and longtime Adnan supporter Ivan Bates. What would this mean for the new hearing? Well, we had no idea, and things behind the scenes were complicated, but more on that later in the season. Adnan's legal team wasn't sure how the new state's attorney felt about the motion to vacate that was filed by his predecessor, so they decided to file a new petition as well under the Juvenile Restoration Act, also called the JRA. The JRA, which was passed into law in Maryland in 2024, provided a way for those who had been sentenced as adults but were juveniles at the time of the offense to file for relief after serving at least 20 years of their sentence, and Adnan checked every box. It's a good thing that Adnan's team filed for that relief, too, because in February of 2025, state's attorney Ivan Bates formally withdrew the motion to vacate Adnan's conviction, making pretty much everything Marilyn Mosby did and the ensuing litigation by the Heyman-Lee family moot. It didn't moot the fact that Adnan had already been living his life outside of prison for over 2 years, working and taking care of his family, his elderly parents, and his wife. Yes, his wife. Adnan is married and has been well before he was released. This fact went a long way in convincing the court that Adnan was not a danger to society and would continue to be a productive member of society. On March 5th, 2025, the court granted Adnan's JRA petition, resentencing him to time served. Now, while it's true his previous exoneration was backtracked and his conviction now stands, he continues to live as a free man, as he always deserved. Now, this was the speed update, and so much happened behind the scenes that I promise is worth the wait to hear, but we're going to save that for a whole episode later this season. For now, without further ado, and because a decade of waiting is long enough, it is finally time to reveal Colin's bombshell.
Why did the jurors at the Adnan Syed trial find him guilty? It was a question that Sarah Koenig wanted answered when she did Serial all the way back in 2014. To get an answer to that question, she spoke with Stella Armstrong, one of the jurors in the Adnan Syed case.
Sarah Koenig. I wanted to know from Stella Armstrong why she voted to convict Adnan Syed. She immediately talked about Jay, that she believed him.
Like I said, it's been a while, but I remember the one young man who was supposedly his friend. Mm-hmm. Who had enabled him to move the body.
Right.
And that struck me that why would you admit to doing something that drastic if you hadn't done it? You know what I mean? For what reason? What was he going to gain from that? He still had to go to jail.
Yeah. Actually, he didn't go to jail.
Oh, he didn't? The friend didn't?
No.
Oh.
He walked.
That's strange. That's strange.
Yes. Jay Wilds walked and didn't serve a single day in prison. But he testified at trial to a near certainty he would serve 2 years in prison by taking the stand and implicating Adnan and himself in the crime. And as Stella Armstrong notes, this belief played a big role in her decision to vote to convict Adnan. After all, why lie about helping Adnan in the wake of the murder when you know that doing so will land you in prison? But what if, in fact, Jay was nearly certain that by testifying in the way the state wanted, it actually was a near certainty he would never spend a single day in prison? And what if Jay was also certain that by testifying the way the state wanted, his conviction would be erased from his record as long as he stayed in the straight and narrow for a couple of years? This isn't mere conjecture, but instead something confirmed by Jay's attorney herself. And according to her, she's not alone. Instead, she said that the two prosecutors in the Adnan Syed case have admitted to these two undisclosed parts of Jay's plea deal to Ethics Counsel for the state of Maryland. This is the bombshell episode of Undisclosed.
To reorient everyone to everything, let's start with the pertinent facts. In the early morning hours of February 28, 1999, Jay Wilds was taken to the police station and made a statement that led to Adnan being arrested hours later for the murder of Heyman Lee. Jay himself, however, wasn't arrested, instead making multiple statements over the next 6 months as the state massaged his story to match up with their preferred narrative. Eventually, Jay gets picked up on September 7, 1999, whereupon Assistant State's Attorney Kevin Urick sets up a meeting between Jay and attorney Ann Benaroya, who agrees to represent him for free. That same day, the two sides execute a printed plea agreement that states, in exchange for Jay's testimony at Adnan's trial, Urick will recommend that Jay receive a 5-year sentence with the Department of Corrections, with all but 2 years suspended. In other words, Urick will recommend that Jay serves only 2 years behind bars. That same day, there's a hearing before Judge Joseph McCurdy, who holds the result of the hearing sub curia. Sub curia is Latin for under consideration of the court, and that's exactly what it means here. Jay will not complete his guilty plea, and Judge McCurdy will defer his decision on what sentence Jay will receive until after Jay testifies at Adnan's trial. Thereafter, in December 1999, Adnan has his first trial. After Jay has fully testified and been cross-examined, a mistrial gets declared, setting up trial number two. Trial number two then begins on January 27, 2000. At this trial, Jay testifies as following about his plea deal.
Question. Now, Mr. Wilds, one of the agreements that Mr. Yurick agrees to perform is at the time you come back, you expect to be sentenced, do you not?
Answer. Yes, ma'am. Jay also testifies to his specific understanding of his plea agreement, that his testimony at trial to the state's satisfaction obligates Mr. Yurick to recommend a 5-year sentence with the Department of Corrections with all but 2 years suspended. Again, this tracks back to juror Stella Armstrong's understanding that Jay would serve 2 years behind bars by testifying.
Beyond this, though, during this second trial, we have 5 new things that emerge about Jay's plea deal that were undisclosed at the first trial and before the second trial, not coming up until Jay was cross-examined by defense counsel Christina Gutierrez. First, Jay's plea was incomplete under Maryland law because he was not asked to give a statement of facts that described what he did in connection with the crime. Why is this important? This then takes us to the second undisclosed part of Jay's plea. Second, as noted, Judge McCurdy held the result of the hearing on Jay's plea deal sub curia, pending his testimony at trial. So again, why was this highly important? Here's what trial judge Wanda Hurd had to say about it when talking to prosecutor Kevin Yurick at trial.
It would appear to the court that every effort was made to hide the existence of Mr. Wilde's plea, or attempted to plead, because this says guilty verdict held sub curia, which means what you did was you did everything except for have the court find the defendant guilty. He held the issue of whether or not the defendant was guilty sub curia, pending the state providing a statement of facts, it appears. And the only reason why anyone would do that, in my mind, is so that there would be no record of a guilty plea, because if there's no guilty finding, he hasn't been found guilty. He didn't hold sub curia the sentencing. He held sub curia the finding of guilt. The other thing I find interesting is that counsel has pointed out, I've never seen a file like this before. Now, I've worked in the district, and I've been around the courthouse for many a time, and I was a law clerk, but every indication, every printed page, every item is not computer-generated except for this. For the case number for one witness to plead guilty, no witnesses, which is so unusual. It appears very, very odd and unusual, and I can see why Ms. Gutierrez would start to wonder.
For Judge Hurd, this wasn't enough to dismiss the charges against Adnan. But she did instruct the jury at the close of the case as follows. Quote, the completion of Jay Wilds' guilty plea and sentencing hearing has been postponed until after the proceeding, this proceeding. Despite the fact that Jay Wilds has referred to his agreement with the state as a guilty plea or a truth agreement, this agreement does not contain the necessary statement of facts and is not yet a guilty plea under Maryland law. Next, we have the third undisclosed part of Jay's plea deal, which is that Jay had the ability to withdraw from the plea deal. In other words, the deal was not binding on him. When Christina Gutierrez brought this up, Kevin Yurick denied it, but Jay confirmed the fact that he could withdraw. So did his attorney, Ann Benaroya. She spoke to Judge Hurd off the record, with Judge Hurd then discussing this with defense counsel Christina Gutierrez on the record.
Judge Hurd. She said it. She said that it was her understanding that the defendant Wilds, her client, could withdraw from the plea.
Christina Gutierrez. Right. At any time.
Judge Hurd. That's what she said.
And indeed, Judge Hurd herself indicated that based upon Jay not giving a statement of facts, her own reading of the plea agreement was that Jay could in fact withdraw from the plea deal.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with a simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, Companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelance profiles, get help drafting a job post, or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them to take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com today and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
This then takes us to the fourth undisclosed part of Jay's plea deal, which is that after entering into his plea agreement, Jay had concerns about his deal and contacted Judge McCurdy, resulting in a hearing that was held with Ben Arroyo, Jay, and Judge McCurdy, but without the prosecutors being present. Again, this led to a shocked response by Judge Hurd, who stated to Urich, "You're suggesting that a judge would have an ex parte communication with a defendant and his attorney without the presence of the state?" And the other answer was that yes. According to Jay, Judge McCurdy offered him the chance to withdraw from the plea deal, contradicting the claim that Urich made throughout trial. Finally, we have the fifth and maybe the most important undisclosed part of Jay's plea deal, which is that Urich introduced Jay to Ben Arroyo, who ended up representing Jay for free. According to Gutierrez, quote, "This was an absolute and complete surprise, and if that's not Brady, there's nothing that's Brady." She also added that, quote, "It is clear we've not been told the truth about his bargain, and that we're entitled to know that information about the bargain, what he gets in exchange for that bargain prior to the middle of cross." Now, this is the one area where everyone agrees we saw some of the old Christina Gutierrez, as she made repeated requests to find out how fluid Jay's plea agreement was, and practically begged Judge Hurd to allow her to cross-examine both Urich and Ben Arroyo about the nature of his deal and any undisclosed agreements. Now, Judge Hurd herself was disturbed by this disclosure, telling Urich that by him hooking up Jay with Ben Arroyo, it was an undisclosed benefit of the bargain. Specifically, she said, quote, "It affected him. And as I explained to you, I view that as a benefit that was derived, some assistance the state's attorneys got, used in helping him to secure a lawyer." Now again, Judge Hurd found this was not enough to dismiss the charges against Adnan, and she found that delving deeper would violate Jay's attorney-client privilege. But she was compelled again to give an instruction to the jurors just before they deliberated, telling them they could assess how big of an undisclosed benefit this was.
Shortly thereafter, Assistant State's Attorney Kathleen Murphy gave her closing argument, and during it, she told the jurors what we all know, that Jay was the linchpin of the state's case. Specifically, she said, let's talk about Jay Wiles, because clearly this case hinges on his testimony. She then stressed Jay's credibility, stating, you don't have to like Jay Wiles or like what he did to know that he's telling the truth. You had an opportunity to watch him, not only hear him, but watch him as he sat here and testified. And remember, as he sat here and he recounted specific details of that day, remember the look on his face as he was asked to recall that moment in the Best Buy parking lot when he saw the body of Haley. The look on his face, an expression that told you he wasn't looking at anything in this courtroom. He was seeing again the body of a dead woman, something he'd never seen before. She then added, Jay Wiles was sincere. You heard a lot of questions and a lot of testimony about the inconsistencies of statements, and I'm sure you're going to hear a lot more. Jay Wiles never once told you that he didn't lie to the police. He was honest with you. Adnan, of course, was convicted on February 25th. Jay then had his hearing on his plea agreement held on June 6, 2000. At the hearing, despite what was stated in the printed plea agreement, Yurik said he was happy to make a recommendation of leniency on Jay's behalf because of how helpful he was and his showing of remorse.
So it was a cap of 5, suspend all but 2, 3 years probation.
And I will bring to the court's attention that he fully and satisfactorily complied with every term of the agreement under very difficult circumstances. He had to testify twice in prolonged testimony, once at a mistrial, once in at the second trial. As I said, very satisfactory, and I believe honestly testified. And also, I would say something you don't usually see. I think he actually showed remorse during the I saw real remorse on his part, so I'll be happy to make that recommendation. All
right. Immediately after Yurik made his statement, Ben Arroyo followed up by asking Judge McCurdy to suspend all imprisonment for Jay and consider converting his sentence to probation before judgment, citing back to what Yurik had just said.
Wish to be heard.
Yes, I do, Your Honor. Your Honor, I'm going to begin with the request that the court would suspend any incarceration at all in this matter, and if not today, at some point in the future, consider a probation before judgment disposition. And we have numerous reasons for that.
Okay.
First of all, Your Honor, as Mr. Yurik said, as far as the trial itself is concerned, I mean, this was an incredible ordeal.
So what exactly is probation before judgment? It's basically legal time travel. You initially have a conviction on your record during a probationary period, but if you don't violate the terms of your probation, it's like you go back in time, before your judgment, and your conviction is erased from your record. It's as if you were never found guilty of committing any crime. In response to what Ben Arroyo asked of Judge McCurdy, Yurik neither opposed her request for no prison time, nor opposed her motion for probation before judgment. Thereafter, referencing what Yurik said about how helpful and remorseful Jay was, Judge McCurdy suspended all incarceration for Jay and strongly suggested he would strike Jay's conviction if he didn't violate probation for 2 years.
And also, I think, just based on what I've been told, that your testimony was instrumental in bringing this matter to a just conclusion, or what most people believe to be a just conclusion. So I think what that says is that you took responsibility for your own behavior and you attempted to do whatever you could to resolve the issue, I guess, for want of a better word. So I'm satisfied that it would be of no benefit whatsoever to incarcerate you as a result of all this. So I'm going to impose the sentence of 5 years, suspend all the time served, 2 years probation, suspend the cost. And I understand Ms. Benaroya has done this pro bono. Is that correct? You haven't been paid, have you?
No, sir, I have not.
And hopefully you'll be able to go forward, and at the end of the 2 years, if Ms. Benaroya files a motion within 90 days, I would consider striking this judgment of conviction.
After the hearing, Benaroya followed up on her oral motion with a written motion to convert Jay's sentence to probation before judgment and strike Jay's conviction after he'd completed probation. But less than a year into Jay's probationary period, Jay violated his probation after being convicted of possession of marijuana, with Benaroya again representing him in that case.
Next, let's fast forward to 2014, back when the Serial podcast first aired. While it was airing, I started blogging about the case, and that led to Jay's attorney, Ann Benaroya, reaching out to me, prompting conversations both over the phone and via email. These conversations continued when we started doing Undisclosed, and eventually they came to involve Susan Simpson as well. Now, Benaroya was very concerned about attorney-client confidentiality and privilege, so she asked for and received my promise not to put anything on the podcast that she didn't want the public to hear. After I covered a lot of ground with Ben Arroyo, I sent her an outline of the topics we planned to cover on Undisclosed, based on what she had shared with me to see if anything was off limits. In response, she said she'd call the Office of Bar Counsel. That deals with attorney ethics issues in Maryland. Ben Arroyo later followed up with an email in which she wrote, "I called Bar Counsel. The attorney I spoke with said he will ask someone from our ethics commission to return my call. The attorney advised me not to contact Murphy or Urich and stated I would receive proper guidance on how to proceed. I will share this with you as it becomes available." Now, one of the questions I had asked Ben Arroyo was whether there was any agreement or understanding between Urich and her that he would recommend at sentencing that Jay receive no actual prison term despite the language in the printed plea agreement. In an email, Ben Arroyo wrote that despite how Wilds' plea agreement might read, Wilds' quote, deal never contemplated executed incarceration on either side. She then added that, quote, the 2-year cap in the contract was never intended to be executed incarceration. Ben Arroyo also added that she believed that before Syed's first trial, she, quote, made a lot of noise about her probation before judgment, wanted the assistant state's attorneys to agree that I could file a petition for sentence modification to be held sub curia for 5 years, the probationary period, and at the end of the probation, the court would determine whether Wilds could get probation before judgment. She then added that, quote, after the first Syed trial ended in a mistrial, Urich or Murphy may have agreed to probation before judgment modification in exchange for Wilds' agreement to drop the 2-year cap. Makes sense, right? The risk for both sides increased. Wilds was exposed to more executed incarceration, 5 years, but he also had the opportunity to expunge his record. Now, despite this initial uncertainty, Ben Arroyo then followed up and added, quote, I think this had to have been what happened. I actually remember making a big stink about getting a probation before judgment for Wilds. Ben Arroyo then added that, quote, since Wilds violated the probation with pot case barely a year into it, the probation before judgment was off the table. Can't get PBJ if probationer violates probation. Ben Arroyo closed by noting that her, quote, guess is that this would be the state's attorney's office version of Wilds' deal. Finally, she promised to speak with ethics counsel to see whether assistant state's attorneys shared a similar understanding of the plea agreement. Thereafter, a few days later, Ben Arroyo sent a follow-up message stating the following, quote, counsel advises that the assistant state's attorneys remember the events as I do. Wilds' original sentence was 2 years suspended plus 5 years probation. After Syed's first trial, we modified to suspended jail generally, common parlance for the judge decide max sentence at violation of parole if there is one, plus 5 years probation, and state's attorney's office won't oppose probation before judgment upon successful completion of probation. And bam, there it is. That's the bombshell. According to Ann Ben Arroyo, assistant state's attorneys Kevin Urich and Kathleen Murphy, there was an understanding or agreement by the time of a non-second trial that A, Urich would recommend no actual imprisonment for Jay, and B, would not oppose probation before judgment for Jay. And of course, this makes total sense because both of these things actually happened at Jay's plea hearing. Urich asked for sentencing leniency and no prison term. Urich did not oppose probation before judgment. Simply put, these are capital B Brady violations. So why is this the first you're hearing about them? Well, after Ben Arroyo's reveal, I of course asked her, can we share this information on the podcast? She said we could not. She cited attorney-client confidentiality. Attorney-client privilege is absolute shields to prevent the public from learning the true nature of Jay's plea deal. Of course, I pressed her to change her mind, but she refused, and I reluctantly agreed to keep quiet, citing the case of Alton Logan. Here's a 60 Minutes clip in his case.
This is a story about an innocent man who languished in prison for 26 years, while two attorneys who knew he was innocent stayed silent. As we first reported earlier this year, they did so because they felt they had no choice. Alton Logan was convicted of killing a security guard at a McDonald's in Chicago way back in 1982. Police arrested him after a tip and got 3 eyewitnesses to identify him, even though Logan, his mother, and his brother all testified he was at home asleep when the murder occurred. But a jury found him guilty of murder. Now, new evidence reveals that Logan did not commit that murder. something that was not new to those two attorneys who knew it all along but said they couldn't speak out until now.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Specifically, 26 years after Logan was arrested for murder, two public defenders came forward with an affidavit from their recently deceased client, Andrew Wilson, confessing to the crime for which Logan was convicted. Wilson had confessed them decades earlier, but they were bound by attorney-client confidentiality to stay silent, although they did convince Wilson to sign the affidavit and let them make it public if he died before they did. When Wilson thereafter did die, they went public with the affidavit, and Logan's murder conviction was reversed 26 years after he was first arrested. Well, guess what, listeners? It's now also been 26 years since Adnan was arrested, and I've spent the past decade honoring Ben Arroyo's request. It's kind of eaten away at me, as it did for Wilson's public defenders, who I hosted for an event at my old law school. I was so taken by that event that I wrote an essay called Ordeal by Innocence, in which I argued there should be, but is not currently, an exception to attorney-client confidentiality when an attorney has information that might hurt her client but could set another wrongfully convicted man free.
But then last year, something shifted. Specifically, Ben Arroyo, for some reason, appeared on a podcast called Just Legal History. And lo and behold, she discussed significant parts of what happened during the plea bargaining process on the podcast, eliminating any remaining claim of client confidentiality. Ben Arroyo began by saying how she felt Jay's constitutional rights had been violated in many ways, and how she agreed to a tentative plea for Jay at his initial hearing on September 7th, 1999, despite thinking he couldn't even be charged with a crime at that point.
My initial position was, you guys can't even charge this guy at this point because you've delayed so long. His, you know, again, his due process rights have been violated upside down and sideways, and we agreed to tentative plea, because again, I have no discovery, I don't have a client.
Ben Arroyo then added that she made a big deal about all the violations of Jay's constitutional rights that could lead to tort claims, resulting in Jay's plea being held sub curia, because they couldn't agree on a sentence.
So, I made a big deal about the tort problems that I described at the time. Asked the judge to enter a plea, hold it sub curia, because, first of all, for charges, couldn't agree on sentencing. I mean, again, I have no idea what's going on. I don't have discovery. And I don't know, the client wants me to represent him.
In terms of her state of mind, Benaroya refers to Jay's printed plea deal as a boilerplate agreement that they signed solely just so there could be judicial supervision over a case that had already featured so many constitutional violations.
Everybody's kind of that knows this case is familiar with that plea agreement that was written on like some drug.
Boilerplate. I mean, yeah, it was a boilerplate.
So was that done on like September 7th? Was that written out on the 7th or that first day?
Oh yeah, it would have been written out like in the first. I don't remember the timing, but I do remember that bitch. It was great. My hair was on fire to get a plea and to get this guy pled. Because remember, again, this guy has got Fifth Amendment. He's got Fifth and Sixth. Right, his right to the process he's due as a guy who is in jeopardy for murder, that's been violated. His right to his privilege, his right against self-incrimination, the Fifth Amendment and Maryland Constitution privilege against self-incrimination, that's been violated all over the place. His right to an attorney, that's been violated all over the place. I don't know about Fourth Amendment, you know, for the illegal searches and seizures for that First Amendment, but my point is, I'm looking at the situation saying the only way that this guy is, that anything that can help this guy is going to happen is if we enter a plea right now so that we have judicial supervision. And so, otherwise, this poor kid is at the mercy of this prosecutor and that helps.
Okay.
Benaroya then repeated again that her position at the September 7th hearing was that Jay could get no prison time because his constitutional rights had been violated.
Unlike what happened with Wilde, where the contract, the only contract that we could make would be for charges, and again, we couldn't even do it for sense. My position was no jail because of the torts.
Benaroya and the host then turned to Jay's sentencing hearing that was held after Adnan was convicted. Benaroya begins by referencing the motion she made to modify Jay's sentence to probation before judgment. She ties this motion to tort stuff, in other words, the constitutional violations she had first told Urich and McCurdy about at the September 7th hearing.
Okay, but it did. And
we filed the motion to modify Wilde's sentence, too, but that was, again, that was because of the tort stuff.
So then at the end, Jay Wilde finalizes his plea deal. Mm-hmm.
And then Benaroya gets into some of the reasoning behind Jay not serving any prison time. She again ties this back to violations of Jay's constitutional rights that she first raised during the September 7th hearing, and then Benaroya notes that she followed up on this by serving a notice that she would bring a civil action against the city if Jay served even one day in prison, with this likely having an impact on both Urich and McCurdy.
But it was zero jail time, even though McCurdy gave him zero jail time.
But again, that was because of the police, because of the violations were also tort claims. Our position was, and back in those days, we had to file a notice. It was called a notice of tort. You're going to see the police or public official. You have to file within 6 months of the date of the event. So we had to serve a notice on the city solicitor. So we did, and that goes to the sentencing because. The minute if he lost his liberty at all, then, as long as the police, what they had done, especially on the types of, it wasn't a rough takedown, it was not a Freddie Gray or George Floyd type of situation. So what's the damage to Wilde losing his liberty? If he had lost his liberty for even a day, then, all of these police torts would be complete, would be actionable. That was my position. And I think Urich and McCurdy, I think they all recognized that.
Finally, Benaroya's follow-up comments are a bit tough to decipher, but it seems like she says that Urich and she both knew that the printed plea agreement did not really mean that Urich would recommend 2 years incarceration for Jay because being bound to such a deal would have been incompetent representation by her.
I think Mr. Urich asked for like 5 years to spend all the 2 or 3 or something like that at the outset. I don't agree to it because, again, that would have been competent.
Okay, well, thanks for, I guess that's kind of not really been known, so that's definitely something that's kind of, that knew that explanation, because there is a lot of people that wanted to know why Jay got no prison time out of this.
Now, as the host of the podcast notes, this is brand new information, and it's something a lot of people have wanted to know over the past decade. And now, I can finally disclose what Ben Arroyo told me, because there's no more attorney-client confidentiality or privilege. Indeed, in this case itself, Judge Martin Welch concluded that any attorney-client confidentiality and privilege was waived with regard to Adnan Syed's defense files because they had been shared with several people, starting with Sarah Koenig, the host of the Sterile podcast. And guess what? Ben Arroyo claims she also told Sarah Koenig herself something similar to what she told me, but with Koenig apparently not understanding its significance. In an email that Ben Arroyo sent to Susan Simpson and me, she wrote, "I tried to explain this to Sarah Kay when she asked about a, quote, side deal. There was no such thing, but she didn't understand my point. Incarceration means confinement to most people, but in my world it was an equivocal term, and clarifying with ASAs was a daily endeavor. The difference between executed and suspended is liberty versus not. Most people hear incarceration and assume confinement. Suspended wouldn't cross most folks' minds. I think that's exactly Colin's point. Incarceration is equivocal. Everyone assumes that Jay signed up for a guideline sentence, which is true, but the key detail, the only one that really mattered, suspended, was never fleshed out." And this is once again where Sarah Koenig and Cyril can be so frustrating. She had a case of prosecutorial misconduct served up for her in a silver platter. As noted, she even spoke to juror Stella Armstrong, who said she was convinced of Adnan's guilt because why would Jay implicate Adnan and himself if Jay knew he was going to prison? And yet, Ann Ben Arroyo says she told Sarah Koenig that Jay basically knew he was getting no prison time. But somehow Koenig didn't understand her point, or at least didn't cover it on the podcast. And this takes us to both the logic and the law of what happened. First, let's start with the logic. You know, what Stella Armstrong says makes a lot of sense. When the state's star witness implicates himself and the defendant in a crime, it's pretty compelling when that witness says, "I know I'm going to prison based upon my testimony." Sure, that star witness could be lying about the crime to secure a lighter sentence, but still, he knows he's going to be locked up in prison. And that's why Stella Armstrong believed what Jay said. But according to Ben Arroyo, far from Jay knowing he'd go to prison, Jay knew it was near certainty he would never go to prison. And in fact, if he stayed in the straight and narrow for a couple of years, his conviction would be entirely erased from his record. This puts Jay's testimony in a totally different light and would fully explain why he would tell the story that the state wanted him to sell. Now you might wonder, what if something was a little lost in translation? What if Urich and Murphy actually said they discussed the possibility of no prison time, possibility of not opposing probation before judgment, but no deal was finalized? Or what if they say they knew that Ben Arroyo's position was no prison time, as well as probation before judgment based upon the constitutional violations, but they never fully negotiated these points? Although Urich, of course, later went along with them at Jay's sentencing hearing. Well, in that case, that would be even stronger evidence of Jay's motive to tell the story the state wanted him to sell, because he'd be hoping by playing ball, the prosecutors would go along with what Ben Arroyo wanted. And this isn't just me stating my opinion, it's what Maryland State Supreme Court has held in three separate occasions.
This is a full circle moment because it takes us to the law, as well as back to us naming our podcast Undisclosed. This is a reference to the U.S. Supreme Court's opinion in Brady versus Maryland, which held that the state violates the Due Process Clause by failing to disclose material exculpatory evidence. Maryland's highest court has applied Brady in three cases involving the state's failure to disclose both explicit and implicit understandings or agreements between the state and star witnesses regarding plea deals, and all of them point toward tossing Adnan's convictions. First, in Ware v. State, the state star witness at the defendant's murder trial had the result of his hearing on his motion to modify his sentence held sub curia pending his testimony at the defendant's trial. After the witness testified and the defendant was convicted, the judge asked the prosecutor to send him a letter about the witness's performance. The prosecutor did, writing that the witness, quote, appeared as a state's witness and was truthful and cooperative in every respect. The defendant from the murder trial claimed that this was a Brady violation, and Maryland's highest court agreed, writing that the prosecutor's duty to disclose applies to any understanding or agreement between the witness and the state. But wait, there was no evidence the prosecutor had agreed to support sentencing modification before the witness's testimony. It didn't matter. The court concluded that an agreement could be inferred from the surrounding circumstances, even in the absence of an explicit agreement. The lower court in the case actually found that the failure to disclose wasn't grounds for a new trial because there was overwhelming evidence of the defendant's guilt and that further chipping away at the edges of the star witness's credibility would have been counterproductive. But the state's high court disagreed, focusing on four factors. 1. Defense counsel making a specific and relevant request for disclosure of any understanding or agreements with the star witness. 2. That witness being the only sensory witness to the crime. 3. That witness being critical on the issue of premeditation. And 4. The state emphasizing the witness's credibility during closing argument. And yes, Adnan's trial counsel specifically and repeatedly requested information on undisclosed terms in Jay's plea agreement. 2. Jay was the only sensory witness who claimed to have direct knowledge of the crime. 3. Murphy stressed during closing argument that Jay was credible and critical to the state's case, as well as a claim of, finally, premeditation.
The second case by Maryland's highest court is Wilson v. State. Now, in Wilson, the state's star witnesses were the defendant's two alleged accomplices. Both of them testified at trial that under their plea deals, they expected to spend some time in prison in exchange for their testimony. After trial, though, both witnesses had their sentences suspended, meaning that, like Jay, they served no actual prison time. As in Ware, defendant claimed this was a Brady violation. In response, the state Supreme Court held this was vital information, because with respect to both witnesses, quote, the jury was led to believe the witnesses would be incarcerated for their respective roles in the robbery, when in fact, both men's sentences were suspended just after the conclusion of petitioner's trial upon the recommendation of the state. The state, though, had claimed that these deals were not finalized at the time of the defendant's trial, meaning there was nothing to disclose to the defense. In response, as I alluded to before, the court concluded this made matters worse for the state because, quote, a tentative plea bargain can be even more probative of a witness's motivations in testifying than a finalized one, because it may be more likely the witness will perceive the agreement as contingent upon his or her performance on the stand. In throwing out the defendant's convictions, the court in Williams focused upon the same factors as the court in Ware and also added two more. 1, the witness is somehow serving no prison time, despite their alleged roles in the crime. And 2, defense counsel being limited in her ability to cross-examine them. Of course, both of these clearly apply in Adnan's case. First, Jay served no actual prison time. And second, Christina Gutierrez repeatedly told Judge Wanda Hurd she felt limited and hemmed in her ability to cross-examine Jay Wilds because she was in the dark about the details of the deal and how fluid it was.
This then takes us to the third and final opinion on this issue by Maryland's highest court, and it's hard to ignore its similarities with Adnan's case. In Harris v. State, the defendant was charged with first-degree murder and related crimes, just like Adnan. In Harris, the state's star witness, Russell Brill, was his alleged accomplice, just like Jay was Adnan's alleged accomplice. In Harris, Brill had his hearing on his sentence held sub curia pending his testimony at the defendant's trial, just like Jay did. In Harris, the judge who held the hearing sub curia was Judge Joseph McCurdy, the very same judge who held Jay's hearing sub curia in Adnan's case. And finally, you guessed it. In Harris, after Brill testified, the prosecutor told Judge McCurdy that Brill did a very good job at trial and that he didn't oppose sentencing leniency, with Judge McCurdy indeed giving Brill the requested sentencing leniency. This tees up the first of two differences that make Adnan's case even stronger than Harris, which is that Urich didn't merely tell Judge McCurdy that Jay did a good job and that he didn't oppose leniency. Instead, Urich affirmatively requested leniency for Jay, which resulted in Judge McCurdy not giving him any prison time. Then there's a second difference. The prosecutor in Harris did disclose to the defense that he might not oppose sentencing leniency for Brill. the reason there was a Brady violation in Harris is because the prosecution merely told trial counsel that he might not oppose sentencing leniency, when in fact it became clear at the subsequent sentencing hearing that he had promised he would not oppose leniency, not that he merely might not oppose it. On the other hand, in Adnan's case, there was no disclosure at all by Urich that he might or would request sentencing leniency for Jay, or that he might or would not oppose probation before judgment. And yet, despite Harris being a weaker case, the state Supreme Court still held that, quote, the command of Brady and its progeny was unquestionably, knowingly, and inexcusably violated. Moreover, in reaching this conclusion, the state in Harris held that it was important to note that Brill was the one who claimed he had personal knowledge of the crimes, with the, quote, corroboration by the witnesses derived in large part from what Russell Brill had told them. And yeah, the exact same thing could be said about Jay Wiles and the other state's witnesses like Jennifer Pusateri. Harris is also important because it quasi-addresses the claim that regardless of what Urich recommended for Jay, Judge McCurdy had the final say. That's true, but look again at Harris. The whole point was the prosecutor definitely not opposing leniency versus him maybe not opposing leniency was a huge deal. Because of course Judge McCurdy would give leniency if the defendant's request went unopposed by the prosecution. And here there was an element of that because Urich didn't merely oppose probation before judgment. But in terms of sentencing leniency, Urich went beyond merely not opposing Benaroya's request and instead affirmatively asked for leniency himself. It would be shocking under the circumstances if Judge McCurdy didn't give leniency.
So where does all this leave us? Ivan Bates has said he's open to new information after withdrawing from the prior motion to vacate. Well, here it is, and it's tough to see what Urich and Murphy could say that could really be anything other than a Brady violation. If they say there was an understanding that Urich would request sentencing leniency and or not oppose probation before judgment, that's a clear-cut Brady violation. If Urich and Murphy say they had discussions with Benaroya on either of these subjects, but nothing was finalized, that's a bigger Brady violation. And finally, if Urich and Murphy say they know that Benaroya's position from day one to both Urich and Judge McCurdy was no prison time for Jay due to the constitutional violations that would lead to tort claims against the city if Jay spent even one day behind bars, well, that combined with what Urich did at the sentencing hearing would be the biggest Brady violation of all, because it would make clear that Jay testified to what the state wanted him to say in the hope of no prison time and a clear record. And as we know, any such hope by Jay was not a train in vain because, in fact, he got no prison time and he had the recommendation of probation before judgment. Now, finally, that leaves one last point that bears noting, which is that Adnan's convictions remain on his record by the thinnest of threads. Back in 2019, six of the seven justices on the state Supreme Court concluded that Adnan received constitutionally deficient performance by Christina Gutierrez in failing to contact alibi witness Asia McClain. Now, Adnan, of course, lost that appeal because only three of the seven justices found that Asia's testimony would have changed the outcome at trial. But you know who is a big believer in Asia McClain? Ivan Bates. After hearing her story, after personally speaking to her, Bates said that Asia was huge and, quote, very believable. When we combine Asia as exculpatory evidence with these new Brady violations completely undermining any credibility the state star witness has, Bates should not hesitate to vacate Adnan's convictions. Because while Asia went solely to the failures of defense counsel, these new Brady violations go not just to the integrity of Adnan's conviction, but the integrity of Bates' office itself.
All these years, Colin was forced, out of his own personal integrity, to sit on this information, this indisputable Brady violation, for a whole decade. Had he broken his promise, the entire roadmap of Adnan's case could have been changed. But what this means now is that Adnan can still get his conviction vacated based on these new Brady claims. Colin has passed on all the information to Adnan and his attorney, and if they proceed on this claim, Adnan can once again be fully exonerated. That would be justice for him. But it wouldn't necessarily be justice for Haman Lee, because the question of who killed her would still be lingering. If not Adnan, then who? In next week's episode, we return to one of our prime suspects and examine new information about them, about old buried stories that most have never heard of, and get the perspective of a new set of eyes on the case. Eyes that are so keen, they saw something none of us had ever considered before. Next time on Undisclosed Toward Justice.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless, unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hey guys, it's Meethal, executive producer of Undisclosed Toward Justice. Want to give a quick shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production, and Animal Weapon for our theme music. This time around, we're doing something different. You can leave us questions, comments, thoughts, and suggestions in a voice note, and we might even play it on air. Just go to speakpipe.com/undisclosed and start recording. For those of you that want to engage on social media, you can follow, share, and like us on all the different platforms. We're on Instagram and Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. For folks on X, we're still at Undisclosed Pod. Also, please go to subscribe to our new YouTube channel at Undisclosed Pod so you don't miss out on any content there. Whether you're a new or returning listener, you can check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our revamped website at undisclosedpod.com. If you want to follow Colin and Rabia on social media as well, you can find Rabia at RabiaSquared2 on Instagram, and Colin is at EvidenceProf on Instagram and Blue Sky. Thanks for your continued support for us and for our sponsors. Until next time.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.